Welcome to the Foresight Health Roundup podcast, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Thursday, November 20th. I was off last week, and the MAGA-led Republicans somehow got dumber as they tried to dismantle the ACA just because Obama signed it into law. Isn't giving people a means-tested payment to buy health insurance a lot like giving them a means-tested tax credit to buy health insurance? The only difference is you get the payment now instead of later. Later means you have to prove you bought insurance and you didn't exceed the income threshold. Now means you can lie about both. Oh, I get it. Never mind. I should have stayed on vacation. But I didn't, and that's a good thing because I get to talk about venture capital and academic medical centers with Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you two doing this morning? Dave?
I'm dealing with political whiplash from the increasingly short duration of news cycles. I mean, in the last couple of weeks, we've gone from massive Democratic Party victories to Senate Democrats caving in on the longest government shutdown in history to the sudden release of the Epstein files. What's next?
Well, wait an hour and we'll find out, right? I think that's it.
Exactly.
That's great. Julie, how are you?
I'm well. I am on my last trip before Thanksgiving with 50-something CFOs in Laguna Beach. Dave, you know this crew. And I have to say, you're starting to get some hints of action and frustration, and there is the back up against the wall feeling here.
Yeah. Hard to keep that smile up all the time, right?
Yeah.
When all else fails, do something.
There you go. There you go. Now, before we talk about VC and AMCs, what am I missing about how the GOP wants to replace the ACA? Dave, is there some nuance here that I'm not getting?
Well, you're being way, way too logical, Dave. Evidently, discussing Republican-led healthcare reform is a type of fantasy literature. I've been waiting since the beginning of the first Trump term for a comprehensive, cohesive healthcare reform proposal. Remember, repeal and replace. So here's the problem. Right. Obamacare was modified Romney Care. It was built on ideas from Republican think tanks like the Heritage Foundation. Remember, individual mandates, health insurance exchanges, risk corridor protections for those providing insurance. You know, you take away those components and the policy choices distill down to single payer and free for all, neither of which work for Republicans. I've never understood this, why the Republicans haven't said, you know, Obamacare stole our ideas and screwed it up. Hire us and we'll fix it. I just don't understand.
Yeah. It's all politics. Thanks, Dave. Julie, if I sent you $2,000 to buy health insurance, would you?
Yeah, I don't know. All I'm going to say is I feel like we were having this conversation 20 years ago when the HSA was created. And you know, we were talking about creating healthcare consumers, and Dave, this is when transparency started to become a thing, and da da da. So these are not new ideas, right? Are we ready for them? And is this the answer? So I don't know. I don't trust that most people would use that money that way, Dave, that's for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I know people back in my college days who took out student loans that they didn't need, only to invest the money and keep the difference between what they made in the market and what they paid in interest. And that shrank the pool of money available for other kids who really did need loans to go to school. So maybe that was my first experience with venture capital, and I didn't even realize it until now. There you go. And there's your transition. Earlier this month, JAMA Internal Medicine published a short research letter on venture capital investments in healthcare companies by academic medical centers. There were 144 AMCs in the study, and the time frame was 2014 through 2024. Here are some of the top line findings from the study. 110 of the 144 AMCs, or about 76%, made at least one investment over that 11-year period. There were a total of 880 investments in 693 healthcare companies. The total amount of money invested was $24.2 billion. The median investment per company was $12 million. The top three types of companies attracting VC dollars were pharmaceutical and biopharmaceutical research, health information technology and software, and medical and surgical devices. Last on the list was medical education and training. Sad trombone. JAMA also published an invited commentary on the study by three unaffiliated experts. They said the challenge for AMCs is investing in ways that A, benefit society, B, turn a profit, and C, minimize the loss when what they invested in goes south. I'm paraphrasing there. Dave, is this the right role for academic medical centers? And if you ran an AMC, how do you make sure your money ultimately is benefiting society?
Dave, I'm still stuck on your student loan experience. Yeah. What you really learned about wasn't venture capital, it was arbitrage.
Ah, okay.
And when my first lesson in that was when I was at Harvard for graduate school in the early 80s, they didn't make us pay tuition until the last day of the term. So I took all my tuition money and put it in a money market fund. And you remember interest rates in those days were high single, even double digits. And made a few $100 and then paid off my bill at the end of the term. And Harvard eventually figured that out. But that's arbitrage, man. But I digress. You know, when we're talking about AMCs and venture capital, do you really believe these organizations are nonprofit? Oh, my goodness. When I was on the visiting committee of Harvard Medical School in the early 2000s, only 8% of the school's budget went to medical education. The other 92% funded its medical research enterprise. Most of the focus at that time, and obviously still today, centered on NIH grants, how big, how to optimize, when individual researchers broke even. I got to tell you, Harvard Medical School played that game of overhead reimbursement from the government for research grants like a Stradivarius. I mean, I think they had the highest percentage of recovery in the country, and that led to all kinds of games about how to get more NIH funding, how to push more of the administrative costs in the medical school, and so on. Other things we talked about were competition. Novartis had moved into Cambridge, whether Harvard should have its own CRO, how to monetize the school's brand and intellectual property. Do those sound like discussions that benefit broader society? So what's happened now in the last several years, and the study gets at, is we now have venture capital entering into the equation. And that's coming now at a time when NIH funding is being cut and redirected. But I got to tell you, it's hard not to be cynical. The pioneering work of researchers, medical researchers like those who developed mRNA technology, working for decades in relative obscurity to advance broader societal interests, is the exception rather than the rule. As the letter accompanying the research study points out, most of the AMCVC activity goes to support research into curbing orphan diseases. You also mentioned in the main report the emphasis on pharmaceutical, surgical devices, and health IT-driven solutions, probably related to the first two categories, pharma and surgical devices. You know, that's not really surprising given the return parameters baked into venture capital. But as the report details, very little VC-funded research goes into initiatives with broad societal benefits, things like vaccines, antibiotics, improved healthcare delivery, medical education, like you mentioned, Dave. So just like so much in the broader healthcare ecosystem, there's an industrial complex within medical research that is deeply entrenched and works for its own benefit at the expense of greater society. It's going to be very hard to fix, but we do have to fix it. So I'm going to end here just by saying, let's acknowledge these realities and not get overly sentimental about AMCs. Academic medicine in all its phases, education, research, clinical care, requires a major overhaul. Let's get to it.
Getting back to your earlier point, I remember in the early 80s, I turned down a certificate of deposit at 13% annual interest rate. And I think the school loan interest rate was 3%. So there you go.
Arbitrage, Dave.
I missed out. Gotta love it. I missed out. Thanks, Dave. Julie, any questions for Dave?
Yeah, Dave. So this, you could view this as a rhetorical question or a serious question. I'm actually trying to ask it seriously.
Okay.
Just to prep it. But what do you think is more innovative? AMC's actually building new specialty center buildings or investing in innovative companies that align with this mission? Seriously.
Oh, man, Julie, I'm having a hard time not thinking about it rhetorically.
I know.
Because where I start from is, what's the underlying mission? When you say aligned with mission, what's the mission they're trying to fulfill? And my sense is that both approaches, investing in centers and investing in companies through venture capital or some other means, overweight toward high-cost treatments that generate outsized profits, not the strategies that will generate greatest value to society, you know, as measured by things we talk about all the time, better health outcomes, lower costs, more engaged consumers managing their health and healthcare jobs to be done. So for me, the answer to your question is not whether one approach or the other is more virtuous. It's the underlying motivations driving both types of investments. But if you force me to choose, I'd probably go for centers over venture capital.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. That's great. Thanks, Dave.
It is interesting.
Julie, you play in this world. How does the involvement by AMCs affect the market? And how should AMCs strike that right balance between mission and return on investment?
Well, I mean, so many health systems have made strategic venture investment part of their strategy, you know, for a lot of reasons. But I look at it as you're reaping the benefits of the products that you're pouring a lot of money into to adopt. So on the surface, it can be a smart strategy as long as a health system, I mean, this is probably a very biased opinion, but has a strong super networked investor to get the right view of what they should be investing in and the ability to do so. And they focus their efforts on the products that they know work for them and other systems. Like, this is a game of driving success and reaping the benefits of it, right? So, I mean, if other systems are doing this, why shouldn't AMCs do this? These systems need money just like any other system, and maybe more given the dynamics that Dave talked about with research funding. And, you know, while any system can create tech transfer, commercialize internal IP, AMCs are probably the best position to do this because of their research efforts. So, I mean, Chris Coburn led the pack on this, creating that machine at Cleveland Clinic and, you know, I think kind of moving that machine to MGB, maybe. And while they initially focused more on life science, you're now seeing AMCs do what other systems are doing, creating IP and digital technology and AI. And that was one strategy to commercialize from the inside out. Honestly, on the life science side, the decrease in funding that you talked about, Dave, you know, definitely cries out for greater private funding. So maybe these are becoming kind of mini pharma companies. You know, one of the companies I worked for early in my career was a spin out from Penn that was actually on the digital side. You know, there was research going on in business school that came up with some IP around algorithms, and they spun out a company around it. I mean, this has been going on for a very long time in a bunch of different ways. And you could look at some of these as different from some of the VC funding activity, but I think it's kind of the same thing. You're enabling a commercialization for effectively upside, and you're investing in it in some way, shape, or form. So this whole thing where we're really talking not about that kind of inside out, but more investing in third-party solutions, you know, the Cleveland Clinics and the Mayos and those are doing that as well. You know, I see the world through the digital lens. And to be honest, more broadly, and I assume this is the same for AMCs. I haven't tried to segment this kind of anecdotal observation over the last year, but I think all these systems are pulling back, to be honest. The belt tightening that's going on at the macro is definitely limiting, I think, the thinking around this kind of investment. Those investments they feel limited to more about companies that where the systems are actually adopting those solutions. So as opposed to just like broad brush. I think actually, frankly, the Epic product expansion announcements have driven some retraction in, you know, systems are saying, why would I, if I'm not going to adopt this, you know, small point solution, because I'm going to put all my eggs in the other basket, you know, I'm not going to invest in it. So that's naturally pulling investment back. And I think, you know, instead of investing to drive revenue in the way that they had been, you're seeing a lot more joint venture activity to drive revenue and those kinds of investments, which I think feels much more operational than the kinds of investments they're talking about here with AMC. So I don't know. I think we're actually in a, you know, these reports were done in a time when maybe there was more of a heyday of activity. Now we're kind of retrenching.
Interesting to see what kind of risk tolerance AMCs have, right? Thanks, Julie. Dave, any questions for Julie?
Is there any material difference between the VC activities of publicly owned and privately owned AMCs? Is there, and secondly, should there be?
Well, when I think about AMCs and those two types, Dave, I think really, to me, it's about governance and what their responsibilities are, right? One is probably more heavily focused on having public funds and having to actually really think about what their responsibilities are around what's the right investment strategy, what's the risk tolerance. So it comes, you know, that translates into incentives and definitely into the need to disclose what they're doing to the public, right? So, you know, public AMCs, they have to answer these public shareholders. So, you know, those shareholders want predictable earnings and they may have expectations around what that money is getting them that is maybe, I don't want to say it's more progressive, Dave, but, you know, those AMCs probably are thinking about, like, how do they return benefits to the community? How do they return benefit to the future of that community or the potential for that community? So maybe those AMCs that are managing public funds need to be thinking about what is the right thing to try to accomplish for those funds, whether they come from the state or where they're coming from. And I have to think that the risk tolerance is super different. So those kinds of AMCs might be investing in more fund-to-fund vehicles instead of making direct investments in specific companies. And they might be choosing funds based on, you know, a fund strategy. Like, there are funds for everything today. I mean, if you want a strategy for, you know, funds that invest in women-only, you know, founded companies, you can find one in some sort of, I mean, I know we're not allowed to say DEI, but, you know, DEI-led companies, you can find them. You can find them across any function. And I mean, so you could develop a whole fund-to-fund strategy that really makes you feel like you're decreasing your risk and you're accomplishing something by funding certain types of companies. The Cleveland Clinics of the world can take a much more direct strategy and actually invest in things that are operationally aligned with what they're trying to accomplish as a system. So I think they can take pretty different approaches, and they probably should, of course, because one is dealing with more public money. It's public funds. It's like what we all care about, right?
You know, as a patient of an AMC, I'd want to know where my cut is, right? Or am I the only one doing this for duty and humanity, right? Great discussion. Let's talk about other big healthcare news that happened this week. Julius, what else happened this week that we should know about?
Well, speaking of AMCs, I wanted to highlight the fact that UCSF announced that they're going to go into a big enterprise partnership with ChatGPT in 2026. So, you know, as the Bay Area is wont to do, you see big tech getting in bed with AMCs pretty readily. And I think, you know, you're starting to see, this is to me, watching OpenAI start to then get into the same role of a Google or Microsoft or anyone else who has started to work with enterprises.
Thanks, Julie. Dave, what's your big story of the week?
You know that I consistently say that better buying of health insurance products by self-insured employers will be a force that will drive more change in supply-demand dynamics, positive change in healthcare supply-demand dynamics than anything else. Along those lines, Cigna this week announced a new product called Clarity, which is a new copay only health plan aimed at improving transparency and predictability by eliminating deductibles and coinsurance. It's for employers, and they have five tiers, so you don't have to necessarily compromise the existing network. And I just think these types of programs that push more choice to individuals are going to become increasingly part of the health insurance landscape and have an impact on spending. So way to go, Cigna.
Oh, to be an insurance company actuary. That's the future. Right?
That sounds exciting.
Oh, thanks, David. Thanks, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can subscribe to The Roundup on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.